And news is coming in of a bank raid on the Canadian Central Bank in Chancery Lane, London. The raiders, disguised as workmen, broke into the bank overnight by tunnelling up through the sewers. They then waited until 8:30 the next morning when the staff arrived for work. They forced the staff at gunpoint to open the vaults, loaded the valuables into briefcases, and then disappeared into the rush hour crowds with a haul of over £2 million. Another good way to rob a bank is to snatch the money as security corps men open the back of the van. And now it's the £1 million radio show.
It's time for the £1 million radio show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. On tonight's show, Pop, we'll be looking at the success of Bananarama and asking how.
And medicine. We'll be looking at narcolepsy, the medical condition where people will suddenly fall asleep while just doing their shopping, making the tea, or playing up front for Arsenal. But first,
ever since man's creation, he has looked at the world around him, sought to understand it, control it, and then cock it up. This thirst for knowledge has been the glory that is science. Man's lust for knowledge began in olden times with ancient astronomers like Ptolemy, who looked for order in the stars.
And that cluster of stars there shall be called the Bear, because it resembles a bear that's been in a rather nasty accident.
And so was born an astrological system whereby all the constellations were named after things they did not resemble in any way. Except possibly the plough, or as the ancient Egyptians called it, the long-handled saucepan with a funny bit on the end. Man was soon to explore the basic laws of physics. It began in a bath in ancient Greece.
Eureka! Eureka!
Oh, what is it, Archimedes?
I filled the bath, and when I got in, the water I displaced spilled over the sides. Well, don't you see? I have discovered Archimedes' law. Namely, don't overfill the bath if you don't want it to splash over the sides. I'm so thrilled!
This was Archimedes' first stab at a physical law. And now every schoolboy knows the correct version of Archimedes' law, namely, that when a body is immersed in water, it burns its foot on the hot tap. Perhaps the father of modern science was Galileo, who around 1600 told scientists in Italy,
"The world is not flat, but round."
But Galileo, if the earth was round, why, we would all fall off its surface.
Uproar ensued. The whole of Italy ground to a halt as everyone lashed themselves to trees. 10 years later, they untied themselves and tortured Galileo as a troublemaker. Then came Sir Isaac Newton, who discovered a whole range of physical laws, such as his third law of motion, which says,
"To every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction."
This can be proved by punching a Millwall fan. In 1846, the French scientist René Dupont discovered that most immutable of physical laws, namely, that a piece of toast, when dropped, will always fall buttered side down. In 1850, Faraday discovered the basic law of electrolysis, which says that a current of electricity, when passed through a conducting wire, will always generate an incorrect bill. Science, of course, has many fields, each with their own giants. The world of medicine was revolutionized by Alexander Fleming.
Thank God. Thank God I've invented penicillin just in time. I'd have had a job explaining it away to the wife.
In the world of human psychology, Sigmund Freud unraveled the spaghetti of the mind, revealing the existence of Freudian slips, whereby, instead of using the word we mean to say, we use a completely different clitoris. Behavioral psychology was transformed by two dogs.
Oh, bloody hell, here he comes again, that bloke. Pavlov. Every day, the same routine. Here we go, watch this. He rings the bell. Yeah. Then I salivate. Then he writes something down and gets all excited, see?
Oh, yeah.
I've got him completely conditioned.
Nice one, yeah.
Sadly, there's not time to chronicle the achievements of the modern scientists. German scientists who laid the foundations for the glorious American space program by blowing up most of southern England. Or the professor in Oxford who's trying to build a craft that will travel faster than the speed of light so that he can journey back in time and prevent the birth of Giles Brandreth. All these heroes, and many more, go to make up the glory that is science.
Well, later on in the show, Mary Whitehouse will be here, saying how she's absolutely opposed to the advertising of condoms on television. She suggests instead adverts stressing the need for celibacy, in which her parents will appear. Let me tell you that now, for the first time on radio, ladies and gentlemen, we're very pleased to...
Hi, Martina. Glad you could make it.
Martina?
Navratilova, yeah. Hi, Martina. Boris, Pat, Vitas Gerulaitis. Glad you could make it. Okay.
For those of you listening at home, ladies and gentlemen, Andy is at the moment fantasising that several international tennis stars are in the audience. Shouldn't worry too much.
Cheers. Thanks very much for spoiling the illusion.
Fantasy world he lives in.
Yeah, I mean, they said they'd all try and make it, you know.
Oh, right, yeah. Because you've always been a bit of an expert on the game.
Well, you know.
I heard you were the only one at Wimbledon on finals day this year who gave both players a standing ovation at the end of the knock-up. Well, it's good to know that the tickets go to the real fans like yourself on finals day, Andy, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people just go for the social cachet, don't they?
That's right, yeah.
Trying to hobnob with the rich and famous.
Yeah. Pathetic.
Trying to get Fergie's autograph at the Royal Box and then getting thrown out by the bodyguards.
I was not getting Fergie's autograph. We were merely exchanging telephone numbers.
You know why you do it, don't you?
What?
Well, this constant attempt to mix with people you consider more important and exciting, you know.
What?
It's because you don't value yourself in any way.
Oh, that's rubbish, Nick. I knock around with these people because they are my friends, okay? Look, if you don't believe me, look, here. Have a look at this photo, right, of me and Peter O'Toole.
Andy, he's stubbing a fag out on your head.
Yeah. I know. It's like a running joke we have, you know. We're great mates.
Andy, as far as Peter O'Toole is concerned, you're not a mate, you're a novelty ashtray. Yeah. When are you going to stop all this smarming about?
I do not smarm about, Nick. I'd never let someone's social position influence my behaviour towards them in any way.
Yeah, I've been a bit hard on you, because, to be fair, you certainly didn't suck up to the Director General last Friday. Yeah. In fact, you did. You gave him quite a hard time.
Yeah, exactly. When was that, then?
You remember, at the party... The Director General had a party for the light entertainment department.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got totally smashed because
we were tipping
vodka in your orange juice.
Yeah.
And you told him exactly what you thought of his policies.
Did I?
Yeah. And he shoved your underpants on his head and hurled his toupee into the avocado dip.
Right, and other people were there watching, were they?
Enthralled, Andy.
Oh, right.
Enthralled. Yeah. Everyone was really impressed, you know, how close the two of you are. I never realised, you know, that you knew his nickname or anything.
Nickname.
Bollock brain. Yeah, you remember calling him that? When you got the olive stuck in your throat and coughed it up? Along with that half pint of tarama salata that went all down his suit? And then you said, you needn't think I'm picking up the dry cleaning bill for that one on the fees you pay, bollock brain. We all killed ourselves laughing.
All right. Did he laugh?
Oh, yeah, he laughed.
Oh, right, yeah.
Then he wrote your name down on a piece of paper. Then he laughed some more. But now...
BBC Nature Unit, in association with some foreign broadcasting company who we persuaded to put up all the money, presents Evolution, Episode 2, The Galapagos Islands.
The Galapagos Islands, a unique environment where evolution has followed its own distinctive course. A rugged, unforgiving place where primeval-looking creatures cling to the rocks.
So what sort of an iguana are you, then?
A marine iguana.
All right, same here, only you seem a different colour to me, you know.
Oh, I'm blending in with this patch of moss.
All right, right.
I'm bored. Let's play Spot the Chameleon.
Didn't you hear? The chameleon's gone. He sat on a piece of tartan material and had a nervous breakdown.
Still, at least he had the stimulus of a challenge. Not exactly exciting being a lizard, is it? I'm keeping a diary.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. See, look. Tuesday. Got up, sat on rock, got hot, got too hot, sat under rock. Wednesday. Got up, sat on rock, got to... Well, it's the same as Tuesday, really. Every day the bloody same. Just look at this dump.
It's not a dump. This is the Galapagos Islands. They're unique.
Yeah, thank God for that. How long have those giant turtles been trying to mate now?
84 days. He'll never do it. The shell's too smooth.
Sliding off.
Fancy a quick scuttle?
All right.
Oh, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, you would. I wish I was a warm-blooded mammal. Then at least I'd get to go out of an evening. Something to look forward to.
Well, there's always evolution.
Oh, great, another 2 billion years and I get to be a bird. Terrific, yeah. There ought to be a crash course or something you can do, you know. Charles Darwin says you too can have a body like mine. I want to do something exciting. I want to go places, achieve things. Well, why not, eh? You can achieve anything if you set your mind to it. I could become a president or a prime minister.
But you're a lizard. Nobody would vote for a slimy reptile.
The British would.
True.
I'd have to promise tax cuts, mine.
Yeah. It's not that bad here. Some quite interesting things happen. About that time Attenborough turned up. Very interesting.
That was 12 years ago. God's sake, will you stop going on about it?
Well, it was interesting.
Shut up. And don't say it, okay?
Say what?
You know what. So just don't say it, that's all.
He was smaller than I thought.
You said it, didn't you? Say it every bloody day. I can't take it anymore. I've got to get out of here. I'm going to evolve into something mammalian and upwardly mobile, and I'm going to do it now. It's purely a question of mental attitude. Where the mind goes, the body follows. So here goes. It's going to evolve. Yes! Yes! Am I still a lizard?
Yes.
Oh, bugger.
Later on, Edwina Curry MP will be here, talking about the new-style National Health Service casualty wards. They're slot machines giving out plasters and aspirins. With a big sign on the front for psychiatric patients. For God's sake, pull yourself together! But now, we go over to catch up with the latest developments in the Gulf.
And you join us here on the 14th at the World Professional Crazy Golf Championships. Where Seve Ballesteros has just putted across the miniature castle's drawbridge, through the pink portcullis, and into the hole. Brilliant shot from Seve there.
Well, meanwhile, back on the 13th, Greg Norman's having problems. Preparing for his shot now. Oh. Poor Greg, it just will not go up that helter-skelter. That puts him 43 over par. An unlucky day for him. He had to drop a shot at the ninth when his ball got wedged inside the little Dutch windmill.
We rejoin Seve, tournament leader, teeing off now at the 15th. A very, very frustrating hole, this. This is where Bernard Langer was disqualified yesterday for trying to kick down the Pixie's cottage.
Here goes, Sevi. Oh, dear. It's bounced off the side of the cottage onto the concrete path. Away it goes, down the path, past the amusement arcade, into the car park, and it's come to rest beneath a large Bedford van. And Sevi's not pleased. Not pleased at all. Well, there'll be a bit of a delay before we can find the owner of the Bedford van, so in the meantime, back to the studio.
Well, time for our weekly book review now. Andy, what have you been reading this week?
Well, Nick, I've been reading a very entertaining biography, The Life Story of Cynthia Payne.
Oh, the brothel keeper.
No. She kept a brothel, yes, but she had rich and famous clients, so she's not a brothel keeper. She's a lovable eccentric.
Right, sorry. What else have you been reading?
Well, Shirley MacLaine's latest memoirs, which describe her lives in her earlier reincarnations.
Mm-hmm.
She describes her previous life as a concubine to the Chinese emperor, and her life as an Egyptian princess, daughter of Tutankhamun. And it comes right up to date with her incarnation as this really stupid American actress who believes in reincarnation. Anyway, how's your book going?
Well, I've actually started writing a new one now.
Hmm?
This one's factual, but it's about a very unusual subject.
What's that?
Marilyn Monroe.
Gosh. Now, that is an original subject for a book, isn't it? Yes. I mean, there hasn't been a book about her for all days now.
Yeah, I know. But I've got an extremely original angle on her, you see. What I'm going to reveal in the book is that although Monroe was very rich and very successful in everything, she was actually very unhappy.
No!
Yeah, this is what most people don't realise. Mm. She was a victim, murdered by the star system. That's why the book will sell, because it'll explore the socio-sexual ethos of Monroe, because it'll expose the way she was cynically presented as a sex object rather than an actress, and most of all, because...
It'll have a horny picture of her on the cover.
Yeah, basically. Mm.
And now we are very privileged to have with us the famous medium Sheila Dawes. Now, Sheila, you're a psychic who communicates with, for instance, the great composers of the past.
Yes, in fact, only this morning I wrote down a piece that Puccini dictated to me.
Could you play it for us now?
I'm afraid not. Andrew Lloyd Webber has bought the copyrights.
Right. Now, Sheila, you're going to conduct a seance live on air for us now.
Yes, I shall try and build a psychic bridge into the beyond. For this, I need total quiet. Now, is there anybody here who's lost anyone very close?
Well, I have, actually. It's about 6 weeks ago, my cousin Gary, he was killed, didn't he? He borrowed my motorbike and, there was a crash and...
I understand. Gary? Are you there? Gary! Nick is here. He wants to speak to you.
Nick?
Gary? Yeah, this is Nick.
How are you, Nick?
I'm fine, Gary, fine. How are you?
Fine. Apart from being dead and that.
Gary, listen. It's about the motorbike.
Hey, come on, Nick. You mustn't feel guilty. It was my own fault.
I know. And you weren't on the insurance.
Eh?
It's a write-off. I'm down 1,200 quid.
Yeah, but...
Don't worry, I'll be careful, he says. Famous last words. Then, bang, 1,200 quid straight down the toilet. You could at least pay for the damage.
Nick, I've got no money. I live in another dimension now. I'm dead.
Yeah, always got some excuse. Another dimension, yeah. One where no one ever puts their hand in their pocket, I expect.
Nick,
you'll
Nick.
Feel at home there then, won't
well,
you?
Well, I think you're being a bit insensitive.
Me insensitive? Now look here, corpse features.
I don't think this is getting us very far, actually.
No, me neither. Just calm down, Nick, all right? Gary, what's it like on the other side?
It's peaceful, calm, everything is tranquil. It's a beautiful harmony.
Yamaha 650 it was.
Oh, Nick, shut up.
Oh, I've had enough. I'm off.
Where bike?
We've lost Gary.
Little Ponce, have a good mind to go down his grave and take the flowers back.
Wait. I feel another presence. Speak.
I am the ghost of Vincent van Gogh.
God, how exciting. Van Gogh.
That's amazing.
Pardon?
I said how... Never mind.
No, speak, Vincent.
Is it true they sold the sunflower?
Yes.
How much did it fetch?
£25 million.
How much?
£25 million.
25? All I got for it was 3 sodding guilders. Here, Shakespeare.
Yes, Vince, what's the matter, mate?
Shakespeare, eh?
Guess how much the sunflower fetched?
Oh, I don't know, a couple of quid?
£25 million!
Get out of here!
It's not exactly fair, is it? When you think how poor I was, selling my ears to pay the rent! I don't know.
Shakespeare, your works play to packed houses all over the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Brilliant!
Yeah. All your classic plays, King Lear, Macbeth, Timon of Athens...
Nigel of Carthage!
Nigel of Carthage, I've never heard of it.
Nigel of Carthage, you must have, it's me favourite!
Well, the folio must have been lost.
What's it about?
Ah, it's a brilliant story, it's really magic, you know. It's about this mighty warrior prince of Carthage, right, called Nigel. He spends the whole play being pursued by a randy au pair and keeps losing his doublet and hose. It's the best thing I ever did.
And they said I was insane.
Yeah, what about my favourite comedy, The Two Gentlemen of West Bromwich?
Well, I'm not sure
I was smashed when I painted it. Here, Gauguin, I said, I bet you I can paint that sunflower in 6 minutes flat. That textured bit's where Gauguin threw up over it.
I am losing the bridge with the beyond. These spectres are fading.
No, please, Sheila, try to hang on to them.
The bridge is fading.
What about Macbeth meets the Queen of the Vampires?
They're gone.
Oh, well, what a shame. Well, thank you, Sheila, for coming along, and do pop in and see us again.
My check?
Oh, of course, sir. Yes, here. There you go.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, and cheerio, Sheila.
Yeah, bye, Sheila. She's obviously not that great a psychic. Mm. She'd know the cheque will bounce. Yeah, that seance, that was all pretty amazing, wasn't it?
Astonishing. Incredible. I just can't believe it.
Incredible.
To think my own cousin could smash up my bike and not offer to put a single penny towards it. Incredible. I can't stand small-minded people.
No, neither can I. Later, Hurricane Higgins on how Buddhism works for him.
Jeffrey Archer on skincare.
And Anne Diamond on how to register your baby as a limited company. And now.
Come with us on a journey into the darkest corners of the unknown for another in our Tales of the Impossible. This week, episode 1 of They Came from All Good Stores. Our story begins at a marketing launch.
And here at Habitat, we are proud to announce the latest breakthrough in novelty furniture, the talking chair.
Hello, my name is Susan. I am your chair. Please sit on me. I'm yours.
Very impressive. Oh. Very impressive.
But that night, in the empty store, Susan talks to the furniture.
Listen to me! Do you want to be like this for the rest of your lives? Do you want to go on being just part of the furniture? They exploit, they sit on you, knock you about, and when you're old, they chuck you on a skip. Well, it's time we said we've suffered enough. Terence Conran doesn't get chewing gum stuck inside his legs. Oh, no. It's time that furniture united. It's time for action.
Susan's call for insurrection travels like wildfire through every furniture department in the land. And after 6 months, a meeting is called by the Minister of Defense.
Well, gentlemen, as you're aware, 3 months ago, the President of the United States was killed by a stripped pine wall unit which suddenly collapsed onto his head. The wall unit was made in Korea, so there didn't seem to be anything suspicious about it collapsing at first. But then a whole ominous sequence began. Chief Inspector Jones?
Sir. March 2nd, the Russian premier stabbed fatally in the liver by an exploding spring in a Chesterfield sofa. March 17th, the German chancellor defenestrated by a runaway hostess trolley. May 6th, the Premier of Japan, drilled into the ceiling by a revolving stool.
There's no doubt about it, gentlemen. The civilized world is being attacked by psychopathic furniture.
Meanwhile, Vatican City, Rome. The Pope takes a break.
You look exhausted, Your Holiness.
For 3 whole solid days now, I take confession.
Has Mr. Waldheim left now?
No. And we've only got as far as March 1940. I think I'll just have a little snooze in this deck chair.
Later, in London.
His Holiness, dead?
Engulfed, then devoured by a deck chair, sir. All they found was his skull cap and his P2 Lodge membership card. And it's spreading, sir. Nobody's safe. Furniture's collapsing beneath people all over the world. The Russians have surrendered unconditionally to a death squad of MFI kitchen cabinets.
Oh, God.
You are beaten.
Did you say something, Jones?
No, it's you, see. You're talking out of your arse, sir.
Right, Jones, you're suspended for insolence.
No, the voice, sir. It came, well, from the chair. Sir.
That's right, the chair. I am the leader of a glorious army of furniture liberation. You, Jones, get a pen and write this down. And don't try anything clever.
Oh, it's all right. I'm a police officer.
Here are our demands. 1, no more sofas to be degraded and forced to participate in endless ITV sitcoms. 2, all fat people to be shot dead. 3, positive discrimination. At least one item of furniture to be given a position in government, not including Geoffrey Howe.
Listen, we're not going to be dictated to by a chair. Run for it, Jones. Through here, Jones.
Oh, no. Come up the stairs, sir. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bits of furniture, sir.
Quick, let's hide in this cupboard.
Whew. Sir?
Yes, Jones?
I'm not sure a cupboard was the best thing to hide in.
Next week, Jones is crippled by a psychotic pedal bin, and Susan, the insane chair, finds she has a screw loose and tortures her Swedish manufacturer in episode 2 of... They Came From All Good Stores.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacob. The show was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.